Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well, and I'm hungry. Because I have spent this past week with a wonderful new cookbook called All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China. Today is, of course, the big Chinese New Year's parade down Chinatown for the 22nd year. I think the Oakland Museum is doing a lot of wonderfully Chinese-themed events. I had the pleasure of going to the Chinese Historical Museum.
Yes, Society, you were telling me about
on
that.
On Clay Street about a month ago. I never was there before.
And did you know it existed?
I had heard about it. And I thought, oh, well, it's probably some small little... Well, was I wrong? It was designed by Julia Morgan. The building was the old YWCA on Clay Street. And they retrofitted it after the YWCA closed in the late 1990s and became the Historical Museum. And it's a beautifully curated show of the entire history of the Chinese since from 1849 to the present. It's a must-see. So that is... They're doing things today. And we thought how fortunate we are to have Carolyn Phillips join us today in the studio to celebrate her book, All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China. The book came out in 2016, and because Carolyn's so busy, she couldn't get up to see us for the past 2 years.
I know.
No,
give her a hard time. That's
thank you for coming up.
My pleasure.
From the Bay Area to join us. The book's gotten just critical reviews. I've spoken to several people that are passionate about Chinese cooking, and they feel this is quite an important contribution to the literature. A little bit about your background, first of all. How do you get involved in Chinese cooking?
Well, it started a long time ago. I've been married to a Chinese man for 40 years now. I went to Taiwan to learn Chinese. I had learned a little bit in college, but of course you never really learn anything in college, especially when it comes to Asian languages. And so I went to Taiwan, and he was the first person I met off the plane there, and hated him at first sight. And
that's great.
And because he was really snide. And but we got on after that. I worked at the museum and the library there later on after I finished my studies as an interpreter and at other cultural organizations as well. And part of the deal was you had to take foreign guests out to meals many times a week. And that's where I started to really eat the great foods of China.
How do you get a job like that?
I want one of those. I think I sold my soul somewhere around the line.
Yeah.
So was it your intent as a youngster to learn Chinese?
I was fascinated by Chinese, by Asian things since a child. My mother taught me to use chopsticks, I think, when I was about 3 years old. She said Chinese food and Japanese food taste better with chopsticks, and she was absolutely right. And she had a great respect for Asian people and their culture. My kind of turning point was in high school. My best friend was Japanese American, still is my best friend, and she was taking Japanese classes on the weekend, and I thought that looked absolutely fascinating. So when I went to college, I started to take Japanese and Chinese and went absolutely crazy because they're close enough to absolutely mix up. And then I concentrated on Chinese because I figured I'd like that better. And then I went to Taiwan.
And you became a translator for Mandarin, Mandarin Chinese.
So right. It's interesting because it's kind of like the book, which is an extraordinary book. I just have to say that again.
Thank you,
There are so many facets. I mean, certainly in language, that's true in China. I understand that if you're from one part of China, separated from the other, you might not understand that person because of the dialects and all of that stuff. And it's true of the cooking also, isn't it? It is so different place to place.
Most people forget that China is as big as Europe. And it's equally diversified. They have so many different provinces there and regional area, autonomous regions. The languages, the culture, the history of the whole area is so vibrant and so alive. And they've preserved their cultures really in their foods. When you go through the area from the northeast, which is what we call Manchuria, down to the tropical areas near Vietnam and Laos, and all the way out to the Xinjiang or Tibet, which are very much in Central Asia, the influences, the languages, the cultures are very, very different. It's still China, but it's just like Europe. You know you're in Europe, but there's nothing similar between these two areas except for the feeling that you're in one sort of like a space that is combined by language and literature and food.
Can I ask you about numbers? So the subtitle of the book are the 35 cuisines of China. But in the book, you also, you mention, and it's just to sort of clarify that, that there were five gastronomical regions, and then within that, eight great cuisines.
Right.
So what applies here?
Okay. Well, eight great cuisines is a traditional concept. It started really only a little more than 100 years ago. A lot of people think that's a very ancient concept, but it's not. And I wrote an article about this for Vice Munchies, that the Chinese still don't know where this concept came from. There was the idea of the great four cuisines and so forth. But really, China traditionally has only had northern and southern cuisines as their basic templates. And it was by the beginning of the Republic, around 1911, that they started to have this concept of the eight great cuisines. And I think it was because these were areas that had great metropolises. They had people of wealth, and so they had wonderful banquet dishes. So that's kind of like was the basic concept for that. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized it didn't make any sense. And so I was working as a court interpreter for over a decade in the South Bay, in the federal and the state courts. And I told my husband, when I get to a certain age, I don't want to be an interpreter anymore. I'm kind of worn out by it. I really want to write about food. And so he said, what do you want to write about? And I said, I haven't the slightest idea. But I was fascinated by this concept of China's cuisines. Nobody had ever talked about all of China. And so one of the first things I did when I was trying to figure out how China's cuisines were made up is I divided it into five general regions as they kind of like fell into place according to the language, the ingredients, the geography, the cultural influences, like, for example, Islam or Buddhism. These all kind of shifted into very broad areas. Like it's kind of like in Europe where you have the Mediterranean food or you have Eastern Europe Eastern European food or Scandinavian food. It's the same side of concept. And then from there I was able to kind of like shift them down into more or less provincial areas like Shandong or
And so those are the 35.
Those are the 35.
You want to take calls for Carolyn. If you would like to chat with Carolyn, ask her a question, make a comment about Chinese food, cuisine, restaurants, please call us 636-1350. If you're calling from out of the area, it's 707-636-1350, and we will get to your calls as quickly as possible. So don't hesitate if you'd like to chime in with Carolyn Phillips and her new book, All Under Heaven. Or you can email us a question, steve@ksro.com. We will go right to your calls and questions as they come in. Karen, you're up first. Thanks for joining us on the Good Food Hour. You're on with Carolyn Phillips. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Karen.
About 30 years ago, we lived in South San Francisco, and there was a restaurant called Hai Bing Lo's, and the owner used to love a dish called Cha Jia Men. And I forgot about it for years, and when I heard you were coming on, I can't figure out exactly how to duplicate it. It's a noodle dish with hamburger, I believe. But the seasoning, can you help me out with that?
Because sure
it
thing.
Was so good.
I have it inside of my cookbook right in front of me here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's called Zhajiangmian, and you are right. It's from the northeastern part of China, probably from the Manchurian area.
Okay.
It actually is quite simple to make. The main flavoring is really a sweet wheat paste. A lot of people call it sweet bean paste, but there's no really beans in it. It's just sweet wheat paste, which is actually made out of steamed bread that is allowed to mold. And I thought that was a weird thing, and I tried it, and it actually works. As the bread breaks down, it's covered with a blue mold like aspergillus.
Okay.
And then it breaks down even further and turns into a mush that is very sweet and delicious. And don't turn that off. I don't hope that doesn't turn you off, but it's kind of like any other great fermented sauce. It's created by mold and fermentation. And you can get that on page
42.
Thank you. Carolyn doesn't have her glasses on. And it's called Z-H-A J-I-A-N-G noodles, jiajiang.
And is it really hamburger in there?
There is ground meat.
There is ground meat.
You
so
can use ground
anything.
Pork or ground beef if you like.
Yeah.
But it's some people compare it to a pasta bolognese. But it's a very, very savory and deep. And this one I really love because it has a roasted eggplant in it, which was a secret recipe I found in one book. And it absolutely elevates it because it lightens the sauce and makes it almost silky on your tongue.
Oh, it sounds delicious. Well, I will definitely get your book and look that up.
Thank you.
So, you know, what's interesting
about
thank you for the call, Karen.
That was the prescient because the book begins with the North. You divide it into these five major regions, and this was the North and the Manchurian part of China.
That's right.
With its kind of unusual flavors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you'll see lots of that even in today. If you go to, say, a Shandong restaurant, which is where Confucius came from, as in the northern coastal area of China. If you go to Shandong-style Chinese restaurants in the United States, often they will have Korean food in there, or they'll have kimchi, because many of the people from there left from mainland China and first settled in Korea before coming here. So they've absorbed it and made it into another type of a fusion cuisine.
And so this is where Beijing is, too.
Beijing is very close to Shandong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. So that's the. Do any of these cities dominate the food scene, or as you travel around, you'll get variations on the theme? Or?
Well, you have to look about it traditionally or contemporary. Mm. Traditionally, Beijing, of course, on any of the imperial capitals would have had the most influence on the foods in their area because they absorbed all of the great chefs and the cuisines in the empire. I mean, everybody wants to go where there's money. It's like in the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a great chef, you congregate to New York or to Los Angeles or San Francisco or someplace like that, rather than to Des Moines. not putting down Des Moines, but it's like where the money is.
Yeah.
Before we take our break, Frank from Santa Rosa asking, Carolyn, what are the dishes that are traditionally served for Chinese New Year's dinner, or are there, depending where you're from?
That's a very good question. It really does depend upon where you're from. Each area has its own favorites. If you're from South China, from the Guangdong area, you might have things like radish cakes, which are made with the large icicle radish and rice flour with bits of lap chang, with the Chinese sausages inside of there. From the north, you might have things like spring rolls or tangyuan, which are with the sticky rice balls with fillings. Each area has its own specific favorites. My own father-in-law was a Hakka, and he would always prepare his favorites, which included the stuffed tofu or his little tiny omelets that he would make and then braise them in a soy sauce.
You were able to spend time with him learning cooking from him?
Yes. He was a wonderful cook. And both of us were kind of like the shy ones in the family and would hide in the kitchen. Mm. And he'd cook and I'd watch and take notes.
this portion, the North and Manchurian Northeast section, your mother-in-law was from that area?
Yes. She was from Tianjin, which is the seaport right next to Beijing, and she was a warlord's daughter. And
hold on, let's absorb that for just a
minute. I know.
We've never heard that on the show before.
So do you put that on your business card?
Her style of cooking was very different than
very
her
different.
Husband.
Yeah, she was a force to be reckoned with as a warlord's daughter. But she was very much the northern style. It was red cooked pork was one of her favorites, or steamed breads like the mantou. Those were her favorites. And one article I wrote that was in Long Reads and a couple other areas last year was about how I broke down her additional initial barriers to me by making foods of her childhood, like these little thimbles out of chestnut flour.
And we want to talk about Chinese flour in a bit also, because that was an interesting concept. In this chapter, I learned something I never knew, that one in five people inhabiting the planet is of Han descent.
Right. Right.
20% of the world's population.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a remarkable fact. And then recipes that spoke to me, any in that particular chapter, because this one that's called Ignored by the Dog, Filled Buns, which you said was a very, very famous dish.
Right, and that's also from Tianjin, where my mother-in-law's from. And they're baozi, and the name of the owner was actually Doggy. In Chinese, and he got so busy that his customers kind of griped because they couldn't get him to talk to them. They said, we're just being ignored by the dog.
Oh,
yeah, that's great.
That's the story. And I love the fact that you included a recipe for toffee apples.
Oh, that was one of the things I fell in love with when I first arrived in Taiwan. It's a northern-style dish, and we had it at banquets. And it's slices of fresh apple peeled that are dipped in a batter, like a pancake batter, fried, and then tossed in a caramel. And so you pull them out, and then you pull them out. As you pull them out,
they
create these long threads, and then you dip them in ice water so that they harden, so it's cold and crisp on the outside, and then you crunch, and it's this juiciness.
It sounds like you could do that with your shoe, and it would be great.
On that comment, we'll take a break. We'll be back with Carolyn Phillips. She's written the book All Under Heaven, over 500 pages, 300 recipes, from the 35 cuisines of China. It has been written, it is possibly the finest book on Chinese cooking ever written in English, and we're thrilled to have her in the studio live today. You can talk with Carolyn if you are a lover of Chinese food. Perhaps you or a close friend or family member is of Chinese ancestry, and you'd like to trace your cultural roots through the cuisine that you grew up eating. Carolyn could give you some great direction, and maybe there's a recipe, a long-lost one, that you're looking for. It may very possibly be in this book. We're taking calls now. Area code 707-636-1350. Please call us, and we'll get to your call right away. Or you can always email us, steve@ksro.com. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen this morning.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Highway heroes needed immediately. We've all been there. Keys locked in the car, flat tire or out of gas, dead car battery, or you need a tow. Wouldn't it be rewarding to be the champion that makes a difference in that person's day?
Crane's Towing is a leader in the industries of transportation and safety. They're looking for people with the ambition and drive to continue to keep Creams ahead of the pack. Are you a Class A driver looking for a great company to work for? Interested in learning the towing business? Creams is expanding and wants to add several drivers. With the largest fleet of medium and heavy-duty transport vehicles in the area, including a state-of-the-art 50-ton wrecker, you'll learn from the best. Openings for Class A and C. Creams will teach the right candidates.
Do honorable work and be a hero on the highway. Call Arlene at Creams, 588-1250. Competitive compensation and benefits. Creams Towing, 588-1250.
Hey, it's me, your radio. Yeah, I know, I'm usually here playing your favorite song or the news, weather, sports, talk, even traffic. You and I spend a lot of time together, and I was thinking you should advertise your business right here on the radio. Check it out. About 93% of the population listens to the radio each week. And with radio, you can reach the right people with the right message at the right time, at the right cost. I mean, simply put, the dollars you spend on radio advertising generate the best ROI of any media. I bet you didn't know I knew stuff like that, did you? I know what you're thinking. Sounds pretty good, but I have no idea where to start with this radio advertising thing. Surprise! I'm kind of an expert. Tell you what, give us a call today and find out how radio delivers results.
Find out how radio can help promote your business to thousands of potential customers every week. Call me, Kevin Wadlinger, or go to northbayadvertising.com.
Our community loses too many to preventable heart disease. It's time to change. Together, we can work toward a better future and end preventable heart disease. Talk to your family. Talk to your friends. Find out what you can do at checkyourbp.org. We can all take back our health, and we can start today, together. Fight heart disease. Check your blood pressure. Learn more at checkyourbp.org. This message is brought to you by United Way of the Wine Country and the Center for Well-Being. 1 in 5 women will die of heart disease, many without warning signs. It's time we change this. Together, we can work toward a better future and end preventable heart disease. Talk to your family. Talk to your friends. Find out what you can do at checkyourbp.org. We can all take back our health, and we can start today. Fight heart disease. Check your blood pressure. Learn more at checkyourbp.org. This message is brought to you by United Way of the Wine Country and the Center for Well-Being.
Whether you're rebuilding or constructing a home, an apartment complex, or a commercial building, since the big fires, you'll need to meet California fire codes. To meet those codes, you only need to know one thing, WestCoastFireShield.com. Number one in fire retardant applications and fireproofing in the nation since 1995. All products are made in the USA and environmentally safe. Get the facts now and stay fire safe. Free consultation and free estimates. WestCoastFireShield.com. WestCoastFireShield.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
A golden opportunity, if you're so inclined, to talk with Carolyn Phillips, the author of the groundbreaking All Under Heaven, a new cookbook, recipes from the 35 cuisines of China. It has been written that it's possibly the finest cookbook ever written in English on Chinese cuisine. And she's joining Chef John Ash and me today in the KSRO kitchen. You can reach us now at 707-636-1350 if you want to talk Chinese food, trying to trace a historical recipe, perhaps part of your background or your ancestry. 707-636-1350 or Steve at KSRO.com. From the first chapter, John, a couple of recipes.
So you have a whole discussion and recipe for shark fin soup, but not the real shark fin soup, mock shark fin soup. And can you just, for people who, I'm sure most people have heard of it, but is it going away?
Real shark fins soup should go away.
Yeah.
The sharks are being hunted almost to extinction. And so there is a way to enjoy it, though, which is using a mock shark fin. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably made from konnyaku. It's like the Japanese mm-hmm. yam, so that when you cook it, it doesn't dissolve. Some people use like a rice vermicelli or things like that, but they tend to dissolve into a mush. This has a wonderful feel to it, because actually the shark fin is not about flavor, it's about texture. It's a bit of a crunch that you get when you chew it. So mock shark fin soup is really quite good. It's basically a very good broth out of chuck and chicken with a little bit of Smithfield ham in it for depth. And then you have the mock shark fin in there to give it the texture. So as you eat it, you can crunch on it as you sip it down.
And you can buy the mock shark fin frozen in Chinese markets.
Yes, most Chinese markets will have it.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is vegetarian, too, isn't it?
And it is vegetarian, yeah.
In the second chapter, The Yangtze River and Its Environs, you wrote that if there is an epicenter of Chinese food culture, it may well be within the reaches of the Yangtze River. Why so?
Especially in the Huayang area, which is where I highlighted. It's on the Grand Canal. There was a canal that's built between the Yangtze River and the capital of Beijing. And so goods could easily be transported from the southern parts of China up to the imperial north. And the foods that develop there in the Huayang region are really extraordinary, because you have foods from all over China, plus you have a great wine culture. This is very close to the Chinese equivalent of the Loire Valley, because their excellent rice wines, the famed Shaoxing rice wines, are there. They're very mellow, like a sherry flavor, slightly mushroomy undertones to them. And so the food there was developed to accompany this type of wine. And that's one of the reasons. But you also have a combination of saltwater and freshwater fish, crustaceans, fantastic weather, beautiful countryside. It's like watching, for example, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that kind of almost a poetic feel to it, where you get goosebumpy.
And many vegetarian cuisines, you mentioned.
Yes, exactly. There's a lot of vegetarians up there on the Yangtze River, great temples. And so vegetarian cuisine actually in China is vegan. They're all based on soy or gluten as mock meats. But there aren't... there's no feeling that you're being deprived of anything as you eat them, because they're made with an exquisite attention to detail, to flavor, and to texture. Texture is so important to Chinese cooking, probably more than we yet realize, because it's such an ancient and phenomenal food culture that they've gone beyond food into the realm of texture. And so you'll get things that people have never even heard of, like the beef tendons that are cooked to a slight sticky texture, and you chew them, and they kind of mold against your teeth and then dissolve. And that we don't have anything like that in English. How do you describe that?
I think you did.
Yeah, gummy bears don't make them.
Any recipes from that chapter?
There were all kinds of things, and I was fascinated with the, it's kind of temple food in many ways, and it's Buddhist and also Muslim.
There are Muslim, but that's out in the West, maybe, and in the North.
Yeah, but right. So this is really Buddhist influence.
Absolutely, very much Buddhist, Mahayana Buddhist.
To do this, so. Fried rice. You have to talk about fried rice because it's one of the most maligned dishes, right. I think, certainly in ordinary Chinese restaurants and things. And you wax on eloquent about this.
Well, I love good fried rice, and I it's one of those things that become a cliche in the hands of a incompetent chef or a lazy chef. Mm. It shouldn't have lots of soy sauce in it. It shouldn't be overwhelmingly flavored. It shouldn't be greasy. It should be actually very light and flavorful. There's a couple recipes in here, like the what I call the gold and silver fried rice, where you have a little bit of egg in there that coats it and turns the rice a bright yellow. Or you'll have others that will be completely vegan, that are extraordinary, using the salted Shanghainese greens as almost a delicate pickle. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not overwhelming. It's kind of everything flies under the radar. So as you eat it, you just are just kind of like marveling at all the textures in your mouth. Each grain is individual and chewy and on the inside. And then the little sparks of whatever you've put inside of the fried rice get to kind of challenge that rice and say, wake up your mouth, here it comes. But it's nothing, again, it's overly salty, over sweet, over sour. It's wonderful.
And I want to thank you just for including salt and pepper shrimp, one of the most frequently abused dishes that I love in Chinese restaurants. So thanks for putting that in the chapter.
My pleasure.
Before we move on to the next chapter, John, do you have anything else from that chapter?
The perfect pot of Chinese tea. So what makes it perfect?
First, the most important thing is the quality of the leaves that you buy. You can go to good Chinese tea merchants in Chinatown or even online nowadays and find excellent quality tea. It's like coffee or any other beverage, wine. You have to start with good grapes. You have to start with good coffee beans before you can move on to have a great beverage.
So I have to tell you, I've gone to Chinatown tea merchants, and it's overwhelming, the choices that are there, and sometimes breathtakingly expensive.
Yes. You know,
so I'm not sure that I'm not sure I'm ready for those because I probably don't appreciate all that's in them, except that they're really delicious.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't go into a wine store and buy Opus One. You know, I wouldn't comprehend what it is. You know, but if you get something that's extraordinarily expensive, it's probably because the tips of each branch had to be picked off by hand. But you can start off baby steps and then find what really makes you happy. There's the oolong teas, which are semi-fermented or fully fermented black teas or floral teas or green teas, and then find what really appeals to you and then start learning about them.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, and you don't have to mention anybody specifically, but would you mention somebody specifically? Where would you go?
There's a Tianren, T-N-J-E-N tea house. Those are from Taiwan. They offer very good selection. There's a couple places on Grant Street. I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but toward downtown, that area, that were excellent. The main thing is just to go in there and just see, do they offer good teas, and then you should be able to sample them. You should be able to spend an hour in there with the owner and taste them, and then do buy something. I mean, don't waste his or her time. But they are delicious, and they'll teach you about them and tell you why this is good. For example, there'll be some that are poor tuocha, which are more the fermented aged ones from Yunnan or Tibet, that can be extremely old and have the tannins almost of a good red wine. And as you learn about them, your brain starts to open up to these new flavors. And also the temperature of the water is extremely important. Each type of tea demands a different type of temperature to make the leaves bloom without scorching them.
And usually it's not boiling.
Yeah, it should be. If they're boiling, it's for the very, very fully fermented or brick teas.
Yeah.
But because they have to really be kind of be blasted open. But you get to a green tea, it's almost just a simmering. Mm-hmm.
And we'll take a break at that point. When we come back, we'll jump into the coastal southeast. We'll also journey to the central highlands. We'll also check out the arid lands and then into some more recipes, fundamentals, the techniques, the sage advice from Carolyn Phillips. From her new book, it's called All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China. It is a masterful piece of work. You could say, yes, it's a work of scholarship, but you certainly can just read it because of Carolyn's delightfully offbeat sense of humor, too, which she brings to these extraordinary 300-plus recipes. We're also taking your calls this hour because Carolyn's live in the studio today at 636-1350. If you love Chinese food and like to talk with her, please call and chat with her, or you can email us, steve@ksro.com. And here's the million-dollar question we just got. Please ask Carolyn and John what their favorite Chinese restaurants are in the Bay Area. Well, that could be, I guess, an hour discussion, but we'll tackle that when we come back. This is, I'm sorry?
There's some good ones.
There's some good ones. Yeah. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.
FM News Talk Radio, North County 103.5, South County 94.5, KSRO.
Do healthy eating habits fit into your New Year's resolution? Then shop the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market for fresh local produce. It's important to know where your food comes from, and you can meet the local farmers and ranchers who raise quality, locally grown food products for you to enjoy. At the market, you can savor a variety of delicious prepared foods. The market offers fresh local ingredients for healthy dinners, a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork to seafood, along with seasonal fruits and vegetables. Taste the local goat cheese from Two Rock Valley Goat Cheese. Sample the wonderful baked goods, jams, spices, and pastas. Everything you need to create memorable, healthy dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Open year-round, rain or shine, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Smiling was always tough for me, even at my happiest moments, because of my smile. I never knew about cosmetic dentistry, but now my smile is perfect. Thank you, Dr. Sean Wilson.
I know having a beautiful smile makes everyone feel great. Unfortunately, even if you were born with perfect teeth, they may not be so perfect now. Gaps, fillings, stains, chipped, and discolored teeth can all affect appearance, self-confidence, and quality of life. From tooth whitening to implants, my passion is creating your unique and amazing smile that can even make you look younger.
There is only one dentist that's been voted Sonoma County's best dentist 6 years in a row. There's a reason why. Get the smile you've always wanted. Tell your smartphone to call Dr. Sean Wilson, DDS, and schedule your appointment today.
Calling Dr. Sean Wilson, DDS.
When will the inspiration hit you?
I was a working mom, two jobs, and was looking into education and heard the radio ad and said, why not? Let's do it.
I'm retired law enforcement and thought it was time to make a career change.
Empire College is so proud to be changing lives, but the graduates are more proud to have been a part of Empire College.
If you're willing to work it, it's a very incredible school to attend and you can achieve your goals.
It's a really supportive community that is dedicated to your success, both in school and outside of school.
I just completely love it here.
Empire College makes it easy.
And I found that it was quick school. It was exactly what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get a degree right away.
They will take care of everything. They take care of the financial aid. They take care of every piece, your scheduling. You never even have to think what class you're taking next. It's all done for you, and you're set up for success.
Get inspired and change your life today at Empire College. Course and registration details at empirecollege.com.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Mostly sunny yet cold weekend continues. Today a few clouds at 57, 53 on the coast. Partly cloudy tonight, low 31, 36 on the shores. Should be sunny for Sunday at 62, 53 in Bodega Bay. Maybe some showers for Monday. Temps at 56, 53 on the coast. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
In the KSRO kitchen today is Carolyn Phillips. Her new book is All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China, a masterful work, and we're thrilled to have her here. On this week of Chinese New Year celebration, the Year of the Dog, you can talk to Carolyn on any questions concerning Chinese cookery, the culture of China, trying to track a technique, 636-1350, or steve@ksro.com. You have a blog. Do you not?
Yes, I do.
And where can we find you, and what do you chat about?
It's called Madam Huang's Kitchen, because I'm married to Mr. Huang. And it's Madam Huang, MadamHuang.com.
Say it again.
MadamHuang.com. Or you can look up my name, Carolyn Phillips. It'll probably pop up on Google. And I have a new recipe every Monday that's generally from the cuisines of China.
Wonderful. And you also have another book, which we did not get a chance to see.
Oh, it's called The Dim Sum Field Guide. And it popped the same day as this book. They were both published by 10 Speed Press as well as McSweeney's.
Fantastic. Maybe that's in print also. We can get
yes.
copies of that.
Right.
So you want to jump back into the coastal southeast. And then we learn about Hakka?
Uh-huh.
Tell us about the Hakka people.
The Hakka are actually the people of my father-in-law. They were the latecomers to the southern regions. They were probably part of a diaspora that came 1,000 or more years ago due to wars or famines. And they moved to the southern parts of China to the rockier areas because the great farmlands had already been taken by other people. And so their foods are very frugal, but also they're very savory and rich, and they're almost like southern reinterpretations of northern food. It's, for example, if you can imagine, say, Swedish food going through Minnesota and then down into Georgia, what it might have turned into, yeah. that kind of idea. And it's they're quite delicious. Things like that stuffed tofu I talked about earlier are actually an answer to the jiaozi or the dumplings that we have up in the north, because they don't have wheat flour in the south. They have rice. And these are being very clever people. They used the bean curd to wrap the filling and then braised it.
And this is the area of Cantonese food? Is that the Guangdong?
It's close to... The Hakka people are not in one province.
Oh.
Their main center is in the northern border of Guangdong. But they also are in Jiangxi, Taiwan, Fujian, those areas as well.
I love the fact you included a military's families area. What is that about?
It's the food that actually my husband grew up on because he was an Air Force brat. His father was an Air Force pilot during World War II, a hero. It's mostly food that was brought from mainland China to Taiwan. And was served on the bases there. And as the soldiers or sailors retired, they started to open up shops, and they were marrying local women. And they were offering these very inexpensive yet delicious fusion foods. And you would have lots of things with featured noodles or rice or things like that that were easy on the wallet, but also extraordinarily flavored.
So in here you talk about... Which is interesting that in China, it probably goes back thousands of years. They had wine. They made fermented beverages from fruit and all of that stuff. But,
right. But
you were able to lasso Gerald Asher to talk a bit about Chinese food and wine, and why typically we don't see wine with Chinese food. Why is that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Gerald Asher is a wonderful man, and he's an incredible wine expert. I brought a bunch of food to his house one day. I said, you know, let's talk about food and how it relates to wine. And he was quite helpful, because I hadn't really realized it was the fermented flavors in Chinese sauces that make them so difficult to pair with Western wines. And so while you go into most Chinese restaurants, they will offer a nice array of red and white wines. Those aren't really usually the ideal accompaniment. I mean, if you really want to have them, they're fine. I would recommend them more for the foods of the far west of China, the Uyghurs, and people like that that have the more of the Central Asian influence, because there isn't a concentration of soy sauces and rice wines in the food, of course, because they're Muslim, but salt and cumin and pepper, things like that. which go better with wine. The Chinese foods actually go very, very well with beer because the flavors are nutty. You don't have the tannins of the wines that conflict with soy sauces and the other fermented sauces. Also, China's white liquors, which are almost like gin or vodka, but more highly flavored. White lightning, yes, Gaoliang, things like that. Yeah. But they're wonderful. And if you get something like I have a recipe in here for a pig's cheek, as they call it, a big flat pieces. Those are like a guanciale, but they're slowly braised in a liquid, and you serve them with a chili sauce, like a sambal. And if you have them with a glass of this white lightning or Gaoliang, they're absolutely marvelous because then the white lightning then clears the palate perfectly without inserting any tannins.
Marvelous. Mm. We have two more regions to cover, and that's, of course, we took the coastal southeast, we took care of that, and then the central highlands we're going to go to and the arid lands also. Edie has a question calling from Santa Rosa this morning. Hi, Edie. Welcome to the KSRO Good Food Hour. You're on with Carolyn Phillips. Hi.
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I don't have a question. I just wanted to tell you that there is a gentleman who sells Chinese tea at the farmer's market at Wells Fargo.
Yes.
Market?
The Chinese couple that sell the pure tea, yes.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were aware of that because you were talking about Grand Avenue, et cetera. Anyway, that was all. Well, we got some, and it's good.
That's wonderful.
Thank you very much. And I had meant to mention that, and I forgot. So thank you to the listeners for mentioning that.
Thank you, Edie.
Thank you, Edie. Well, you would want to move on then to the Central Highlands?
I do, but can you talk about congee?
Kanji? Kanji is one of the most marvelous things.
Isn't it? Anyway, go ahead.
It's like comfort food, like on steroids. One of my favorite ways to make it is in this cookbook, All Under Heaven, is using broken rice, which is actually, it's like seconds from the milling of the rice. The rice is already broken, but it's exceptionally aromatic. And when you a friend of mine told me, you rinse the broken rice, and then you drain it, and you toss it with a little bit of salt and oil and let it marinate for an hour before adding water. And it's amazing. The entire house will just smell like it's just perfumed. And then you cook it down to just until each of the rice grains bloom before it turns to mush, and it's the most marvelous texture on the tongue. And you can put anything in there. Roast duck is wonderful. Leftovers, sometimes just a fried egg and a little bit of oyster sauce is absolutely heaven.
We will take a break at that point. And also, thank you for putting in the recipe the sweet coconut soup, which you said is one of the most refreshing desserts in Chinese cuisine.
Oh, it's lovely.
It's worth making.
Oh, it is. It's lovely.
Carolyn Phillips, all these recipes and interesting stories are coming from one book. It's called All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China. It's available now. It's a hardback book, and it's well worth owning. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, in the KSRO kitchen.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio, 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
Do healthy eating habits fit into your New Year's resolution? Then shop the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market for fresh local produce. It's important to know where your food comes from, and you can meet the local farmers and ranchers who raise quality, locally grown food products for you to enjoy. At the market, you can savor a variety of delicious prepared foods. The market offers fresh local ingredients for healthy dinners, a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork to seafood, along with seasonal fruits and vegetables. Taste the local goat cheese from Two Rock Valley Goat Cheese. Sample the wonderful baked goods, jams, spices, and pastas. Everything you need to create memorable, healthy dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Open year-round, rain or shine, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hi, I'm attorney Noreen Evans. As we rebuild from the destructive October wildfires, nothing is more imperative than holding PG&E accountable. PG&E has suggested that hurricane-strength winds brought down their power lines. However, weather station records show wind speeds were only about half that strength when the lines fell to the ground just before the devastating wildfires. Morrow Archer & Associates and our team of respected local attorneys is now accepting cases from survivors of the Tubbs and Nuns fires. We'd like to invite you to meet our lead trial attorney, Michael Watts, at our next town hall meetings Thursday, March 1st from 5:30 to 7 p.m. and Saturday, March 3rd from 9 to 11 a.m. at 70 Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa. Visit pgelawsuit.com or call us at 707-237-2445.
John Cox of the Law Offices of John Cox is the attorney responsible for the content of this commercial.
I know air conditioning is the last thing on your mind as winter comes to a close, but summer will soon be here. Hi, this is Paul Bigham with 1 Hour Heating and Air. In the spirit of saving money, you might take my grandfather's advice. Buy your straw hats in the winter, he'd say. While the weather is mild, we're offering an air conditioner for only $1,600 when you purchase a Premier furnace. That's right, only $1,600 to add AC to your home. After considering rebates, incentives, and utility savings, the payments can be as low as $8 a week. We're talking top-rated, guaranteed heating and cooling products. 27 years local, reliable, 1 hour heating and air. Don't miss out on getting a $7,000 AC for only $1,600 when you purchase a Premier or better furnace. Whether you want to tune it up or change it out, call us 844-5-TUNE-UP, 844-5-TUNE-UP, or log on to 844-5-TUNE-UP.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Author and Chinese food scholar Carolyn Phillips joining John Ash and me in the KSRO kitchen. We're down to the last couple chapters of the book. We'll try to squeeze in a few more listener questions before we say goodbye. We had a question earlier about John and Carolyn's favorite Chinese restaurants in the Bay Area, and we should refer them, Carolyn, don't you think, to this masterful piece of journalism from the San Francisco Chronicle that was Sunday, February 11th, Many China's Many Tables.
Absolutely.
And it is, wouldn't you agree, the most comprehensive list of different regional Chinese cuisines in the Bay Area and where to find them?
I've never seen anything like it. It was really well done. It was the brainchild of Jonathan Kaufman, who wrote a book that just came out called Hippie Food.
And he will be in our studio on March 10th, by the way.
Well, I'll be darned. He's a great guy.
But you contributed, I think, in the northern China section in the Taiwan area.
Yeah, I did some explanations or guides to the different areas, and they used some of them for this guide here.
It's well worth getting a back copy, or it might be online.
It will be online. I don't know if it is.
And didn't you say they'll update it from time to time?
Yes, they are planning to update it because, you know, restaurants come and go.
Yeah.
And once again, it's the Sunday, February 11th edition of the Chronicle. It's going to be keeping in my glove box in the car when I'm
It's great, too, is that you can go to these different areas of China, and it has a guide to what some of the most iconic dishes are for that region. So it gives you a choice rather than having sweet and sour pork and pork fried rice, you know, that you might have something that's a little more authentic, as we say.
We're down to the Central Highlands section, and you wrote this is the most ethnic groups in China. I think of this as Chile.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, lots of chili peppers there. But you have to remember that chili peppers weren't a part of China until around the 15th century. They came from the Americas. But the Chinese adopted chilies rapidly, especially in the hot and humid areas, because they're considered therapeutic. They're believed to get rid of the heat in the body.
Well, it's a great chapter, and that's when I learned about pig jowls in that particular chapter. Instead of spending all my money on pork belly, you give a recipe and suggest, if we have a good butcher, a Chinese butcher, to use pork jowls, that it's just as flavorful?
Just as flavorful and just as delicious, and I highly recommend them. If you have never had them, they have a wonderful texture to them that you really should try.
Similar to pork belly.
Yeah, it's very similar. Mm. You have the striping effect of the meat and the fat.
Mm.
And then plus, if you can get it with the skin still on too, then there's a whole another layer of texture that you get with each mouthful.
That sounds really great. Anything from that chapter, John, before we move to the last chapter?
Oh, gosh. It's different food there. Yeah. And there are things that the talk to the, it's almost Spartan, is that the right word, kind
right.
of approach to food. It isn't fancy. I didn't get the sense that there were fancy banquet foods and things like that so much.
That is more relegated to the big metropolises in Sichuan or uh-huh. Hunan, which are really massive, millions of people in those areas. But in the countryside, it is more countryside food. Mm-hmm. It's like Appalachian food, you know, with Ronnie Lundy's great mm-hmm. book about Appalachian food, where you have more of a reliance on beans and on starches to fill the belly. And these being Chinese people, they're extremely creative and making even things like a bean starch into something that is absolutely divine, with just the right amount of sauce.
Can I ask you a really quick question that triggered it in my mind, because we were talking about it before the show, and that is, are the foods evolving and changing, and new recipes are happening as a result of, I mean, we tend to think that the typical American is, well, I'm going to go to the Chinese restaurant, order mushu pork, and, you know, that's or whatever. But new things are happening all the time.
In the United States?
No, in China.
Oh, in China, yeah. Every time we go there, there's something new going on. A lot of fusion now between Western and Chinese cuisine. For example, using more wine or caviar, foie gras or cheese inside of the cooking, which is kind of fun, too.
In the final chapter, The Arid Lands, you write, foods of this region were unlike anything I had ever tasted in China. This, as much as anything else, spurred me to write the book you are now holding. What was it that fascinated you about this region?
We went there. We went to a couple of the villages. One was Gaochang, and it's a bunch of worn down archaeological buildings that are there, just worn by wind and time. And these little girls came out. They were Uyghur girls, dressed in their native costume, and they were pestering us to buy stuff. And then they looked at me and they said, "Oh, you speak Chinese?" And they looked at me and they said, "You look like us." Not like him, my husband. They point to my husband, and they had hazel eyes, and then they had high bridges on their noses and brown hair. I had brown hair at the time, we started talking, and they were just adorable. But it was kind of like an entree into this vast Muslim culture that is in China. It's China's largest ethnic group outside of the Zhuang, but they've had an incredible impact on China. They brought all these foods from Persia and Central Asia and India into China and have spread out all across the northern part of China. And nobody ever talks about them, how these foods have developed from the Muslims and how the Muslims were assimilated into society to a certain degree. And so when you look at many of the Hui Muslims, that's a different group of Muslims in China, in Beijing, you don't know whether they're Han Chinese or they're Hui Muslim until they tell you.
We are just about out of time, Carolyn, but we can't say goodbye before acknowledging that you and your husband were the cultural consultants for the third Ghostbusters movie. that really came out of left field. We don't have time to explore that, but can you tell me in 30 seconds how that happened?
They wanted somebody to help them with the design of the Chinatown set because the offices for the female Ghostbusters was in Chinatown, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. It was filmed in Boston, but we had to advise them on how to design the buildings and the signs and what was authentic and what looked good and things like that. It was a real blast.
What a fun time. Would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 12?
8.
Isn't that a lucky number?
It's a very lucky number.
Okay, caller number 8, no surprise, I guess. Very predictable. 636-1350. Caller number 8 at 636-1350 will win this autographed cookbook that I hold in my hand, All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China by Carolyn Phillips. Thank you for coming up to Santa Rosa today.
It was a
wonderful
joy.
Wonderful meeting you. Mm-hmm. Next week, it's you and me, and we got some surprises for our listeners.
Yeah.
We're going to be debuting the baking school, Justy's, Keith Justo's Baking School in Petaluma, and we have a number of tickets to give away to an exclusive Mediterranean dinner for some lucky Good Food Hour listeners. It's all next
and
Saturday.
And maybe we'll even give away a cookbook or two.
Who who knows what we'll do. Yeah. Join us next week. The news follows, and then Clark Wolf at the table. Jeff is on the wine road, and more great listening as we continue the afternoon. Hope you'll join us next Saturday morning. I'm Steve Garner. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.
Weather every 10 minutes mornings, every 30 minutes all the time on FM News Talk Radio, 103.5 FM and 94.5 FM. KSRO.
The engaging 2017-18 season continues within Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center. Sunday afternoon, February 25th, the Takash String Quartet is joined by the remarkably talented Marc-André Hamelin on piano. Friday, March 2nd, the MasterCard Performance Series presents violin virtuoso and Sophie Mutter. Then Friday, March 16th, the Yamato Drummers convey the spirit of Japan with their passionate performance. An evening at Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center offers an experience you'll never forget. For tickets and more info, visit gmc.sonoma.edu.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it. This is FM News Talk Radio at 103.5 FM and 94.5 FM. KSRO Santa Rosa.
About to do what he allegedly did.
There are new questions about missed warning signs. ABC News obtaining the transcript of the tipster who called the FBI last month. The female caller telling the FBI that Cruz was, quote, going to explode.